Okay, let us begin. We're on the second line from the bottom on Gimel Amud Aleph. We left off yesterday. We talked about this story with Rabbi Yossi and Eliyahu Hanavi, that Yossi went to go daven in the churva, in the ruin, and Eliyahu Hanavi, when he came out, told him that was a bad plan. Right? He said, I learned three things from Eliyahu Hanavi. I learned you're not supposed to go into a churva. I learned you're not supposed to, you should pray. You could even pray on the derech, on the road, when people could be distracting you. And if you're going to do that, you should pray the shorter version of the prayer, the Havineinu. Mm-hmm. So now we're going to go back to that iser of going into a churva, of going into a ruin, and we're going to discuss the reasons why. We're going to see there's really three reasons why you can't go into a churva. And each one of those reasons applies in different cases. Meaning, we need each one of those reasons for different cases to tell us that all the different permutations of going into a churva would be prohibited. So we're going to break that down to see which cases each one of the different reasons apply. Tana Rabban, we learned it up right. Mipnei shlosha dvarim. There's three reasons. Ein nechnas in the churva, that we don't go into a churva, into a ruin. Number one, mipnei chashad. Right, number one is because it looks suspicious. Meaning, what looks suspicious about it? Maybe there's a lady that you're not supposed to be with that's waiting for you in the churva. That's why you went to this place where you didn't think anyone was going to be. Right? What's this guy coming out of this alley for? Right? It's a shady situation, so it raises suspicion. Now, even though the guy didn't do anything wrong, to create suspicion on yourself is also a problem, right? To make it so that other people see you as a variant, someone who's a transgressor, right? That's not a good thing either. So that's the first reason.
It encourages others to do their...
I don't know if that's the reason, but it makes them second-guess you and judge you in a different way and look at you in a different light. That's the first reason. Second reason is mipnei amapolas. This seems like the most obvious, that the thing's going to cave in on you and there's a sakana. So we talked about yesterday, right, that it could be extremely dangerous for you to go in there. And number three, always the interesting one, mipnei amazikin, because of the potential demons that could be in there, right? They, you know, right? They like to hang out in the place where there's nobody else there also. So if you go in there, you put your... Now, this is a famous
one. Why do demons like to hang out in rooms?
Well, there's places where nobody is. I think that's the point.
Because it's deserted.
Right? Yeah, it's deserted. But whether they like, I still don't understand exactly why they like that, but you should remember the famous opinion of the Rambam with every time these mazikin come up in the Gemara. The Rambam's opinion is that they're not really real, and it's only if you believe in them that they can damage you. But if you don't, then there's nothing to them. But everybody else really thinks that there is such a thing that's out there. But either way, today they're not as prominent as they used to be in olden times. Okay, so we want to figure out what is the case that each. Why do we need all three of these reasons? Right? Well, what is the specific circumstances where one of these reasons would apply and the other ones wouldn't apply? So the first one we're going to go into is the first one, mipnei achashad, right? Because it looks suspicious. So it says, tepu glei mishum apolis. What do I need this new reason if it looks suspicious? Just tell me, don't go in there because it's going to collapse. And where it says, bechadti. It could be talking about a new ruin. Now, what is that? A new ruin. A new ruin is something that they're going to say is not likely to collapse. Why? Could be that it's a newer structure, and for some reason that the thing ended up caving in. I don't know, that maybe somebody knocked it down, right? Maybe there was some attack, or maybe there was a little bit of an earthquake. But the bottom line is, if it's a new building, whatever's still remaining intact is strong enough that there's no concern that it's going to fall over. I don't know.
An old ruin is less likely to collapse anymore. It's been old for a long time. It's, I don't know.
That's how the Gemara says it. Bechati, right? It should nafla mechadash. It just fell. So it just fell. So it's still in its strength. It's still got its original strength. Where it's not like I don't know. I hear. Whatever you want to say. There's some kind of a case where there's no concern of it recollapsing again. The Gemara says bechati. There's some kind of a new case. The Gemara says, oh, still, but technically, Mishum Mazikin. Well, what about the Mazikin? Okay, so it's an old one, so there's no concern it's going to collapse, but still, what do I need the reason of the concern of suspicion for? Maybe there's still demons there. That should be enough of a reason, just because it's a newer collapsed one.
Well, technically means it's enough.
You should be able to learn it out from, but typically, you should be able to learn it out from this other one, right? From this other rationale of Mazikin, of demons, right? What do I need, still, what do I need the concern for, the suspicion for? And my answer is, betray when there's two people. So when there's two people, there's no more concern of demons, right? The demons only like to get you when you're hanging out by yourself, right? But if you got some chavrusa with you, so then you're protected from the demons. But there's still a concern Maybe that there's something inappropriate going on there. That's a very inappropriate thing going on there this time. Right now there's two of you and there's potentially one hidden lady that's in there. And Gemara says, "I betray chashad nami leka." If you're talking about if there's two people, then there's also no concern of any suspicion. What suspicion is there when there's two people that are together, right? We know the halachos of yichud. If there's two guys together, right, there may not be a problem of yichud with a lady together, right? So what concern is there of chashad if there's two guys together? Right. Okay, there's two guys, there's no problem of demons, but now we got rid of the original problem of concern. Mar says, well, it depends what kind of guys. Betray upritzi. If there's two guys that are paruts, right, that the opposite of tsanua, right, two guys that are very licentious, right, then even then would be a problem of chashad. Meaning, if there's there could be yichud shailas with multiple men that are not high standing, right? Not high standing individuals. There could still be yichud problems there too. So we come out the case of the chashad is when there's two people, but they're not two good people, and it's a new building, right? It's a new collapse. So there's no problem of the collapse, and there's also no problem of mazikin because there's two of you. The mazikin don't care about how nice you are, what kind of people you are, right? If you're nice people and not nice people, but the concern that you might have done something inappropriate is still there when there's two not nice people. So that's the case of concern. Next one we said is Mipnei Mapoles, because of the avalanche. Avalanche with the collapse. Where says the table of Mishum Chashad. I already know it's prohibited because there's a concern of being with an inappropriate lady in there. Umazikin, and also because of the demons too. And where it says, so the case here is betray you kashri. If you have two kosher guys, right, so there's no concern that there's any chashad, there's any concern that anything funny was going on here, and there's also no concern of demons either. So if you have two kosher guys, the only concern is that the thing is going to collapse on you. Right? So that would only be true in an old one. Right? If it's a new one, then there wouldn't be any problem, right? And finally, Mipnei Amazikin, right? Because we have the third reason of demons. So when I says why, the people claim Mipnei Chashad Umapolas, we should be able to learn out, forget the demons part. I know all the cases because of Chashad of concern and because of Mapolas, because of collapse. So when it says the churba chati, it's a new churba, it's a new ruin, so it's not going to collapse on you. U betray kashri, and you have two kosher guys. So if you have two kosher guys, there's no problem of chashad. So all you have is mazikin. The Gemara says, I betray, but if you told me there's two guys, we already said before there's no mazikin either, right? So I betray mazikin namileka. There's not going to be any demons either if you have two guys. So the Gemara says, "Bimkoman chayshinan." In their place, if that's like their den, whatever their lair, if that's the place where they particularly like to hang out, then even if you have two, it's not going to help you, right? So that's the other one. So okay, so we have a reason for each one of these different concerns. Because in short, do not go into the ruin. One more little answer here. Vibayseima. Alternatively, you could say laolam b'chad. Another reason for the demons could be even with one person, ubechur b'chati, and with a new ruin that's not going to collapse. Dekai bedabra, but the location of this churva is in the desert, meaning it's not local to any populace, right? So since it's not local to any populace, the hasa mishum chashad leka, there's no concern that you're meeting some lady and like, yeah, let's meet at 3 p.m. in the middle of nowhere in Timbuktu, right? There's nobody hanging out with any ladies there, right? So the ha'isha bedabra lo shchicha, it's not very common for there to be a lady waiting for you at the ruin in the middle of nowhere. So that concern now falls out the window. Umishum mazikinika, but there's still concern of the demons because you're by yourself and you're in the middle of nowhere where they might be hanging out, even if it's not their lair, right? So okay, so we could say you have two kosher people if it's their lair, and one person in the desert where there wouldn't be any ladies. So now we have a good understanding of why we need all three of these reasons for why you shouldn't go into a churva. Okay, in short, don't go into a churva. Tanu Rabbanan, right? We love moving on. Now, we said yesterday, we sort of branched off to this topic when we were talking about the churban Beis HaMikdash, the destruction, and Hashem is praying over that at nighttime. Well, we started this with Rebbe Eliezer's opinion that there's three watches in the night. And we said, is there three? Does he hold there's three watches? Does he hold there's four watches? Why didn't he just say 3 or 4 hours? And we answered that by teaching the side lessons of the different watch periods. But now we're just going to quote a brisa where we really see that it wasn't just a random question, is there 3 or 4 watch periods? There's really two opinions in the Tanaim, whether or not there's 3 or 4 watch periods at night. Tan Rabbanan, we learned in a brisa. Arba mishmaros havelayla. Now there's really 4 watch periods in the night, not 3 watches in the night. There's 4 watches in the night. Divrei Rebbe, that's Rebbe's opinion. Rebbe Nassan Omer, Nassan says shalosh. It's only 3, and that's like what we had on the whole page before that. Everybody else seemed to go with the 3. Let's just get into this debate here. My time at the Rebbe Nassan. How does Rebbe Nassan come to his position that there's 3 watches at night? You see, because the pasuk says in Shokim, The verse says, this is by the story of Gideon, if you know the story of Gideon. The story says, he's just one of the shoftim who leads the people in some battle. It says, Vayavo Gideon, Gideon came, Umeya Ish, and 100 men, Asher Ito, that were with him, Bikzea Machana, to the edge of the camp, Rosh HaAshmoras, the beginning of the watch, Hatihona, of the middle one. It's the beginning of the middle watch. Right? Okay. Right? So that's why Rav Nachman says, middle, you can't have four, right? It doesn't work. Right? Tanas, and we learned, Ein Tichona Elashiyish Lefanel Chareat. What does the word Tichona mean? I just translated for you as middle, but the Gemara says that's not an easy word. You know, what did you know what it means in the use for that in modern Hebrew, Tichon?
Yeah, the...
High school. Right, high
school.
It's teenagers, right? This is in the middle, right? High school. Yeah, it's Tichon, right? Middle school, right? Middle school, but yeah. This is Ein Tichona Elashiyish Lefanel Chareat. The word Tichona means that it has something before it and something that comes after it. Yeah. It means middle, in short, right? It means the middle, right? So it says the beginning of the middle watch. Okay, the Rebbe. What does Rebbe do with that verse? He says there's four watches. How does he deal with that beginning of the middle watch verse? My Tichona. How does he understand the word Tichona? Achas mina Tichona sheva Tichonos. It's one of the middle ones. Meaning you have four kids, you have two middle kids, Baruch Hashem. Oh. Right? Right? He says it's one of the middle ones, right? There's middle. It has before, it has after. But it's there's more than one middle, Rebbe says. It says the middle one of the middle ones. It doesn't say one of the middle ones. It says tichoneksiv, which says the middle one, right? So Rav Nachman says there's only one middle one, and therefore there's three watches. My time of the Rebbe, but what's Rebbe's motivation for saying four? He's got to have some other reason. He's squeezing it into this middle one business. But what's his motivation for saying there's four watches? Amar of Zerika, Amar of Ami, Amar of Yoshua ben Levi. Kosuv echad omer. One pasuk says, and this is David HaMelech talking. This is a verse from Tehillim. It says, Chatzos Laila, in the middle of the night exactly, at Chatzos, midnight, Akum Lohoidos Lecha, I will get up to praise you, Al Mishpatei Tzidkecha, for the justness of your laws. Anyway, he's going to praise Hashem. That's one verse. The Kasuv Echad, another verse says, this is also David HaMelech talking here in Tehillim, a different place in Tehillim. He says, Kodmu Einai Ashmuros. My eyes got up before watches. Someone says there's two watches left at the time he gets up, right? Mm-hmm. So if you say that there's three watches at night and he gets up at midnight, there's only 1.5 watches left until morning, right? It's right in the middle of the night. It's only 1.5. But if you say, according to Rebbe, that there's four watches in the night, midnight is exactly half the night, has two watches left in the night. So it sounds more like Rebbe, right? That Rebbe says there's four watches, and David said, I get up at midnight when there's two watches left. Right, so how does that make any sense according to Reb Nassim that there's only three watches? Rebbe says, you see, there's four watches. Really, it's a good proof. Ha Ketzad, how does this work out? Arba Mishmoros Havilah. It turns out according to Rebbe there must be four watches at night. Gets up at midnight, there's two watches left. Good, everyone's with me.
Okay, but what's the real reason why we're even debating how many watches there are in the night?
I think it's relevant to whatever's going on upstairs. Meaning, we already said that the watches upstairs are relevant to the watches downstairs, and there's some sort of symbol we have of what's going on upstairs. So if there's really four watches, we should have a more elaborate understanding of what's really going on upstairs. We're not going to get into that. We're not going to end up going into that whole thing. We're just trying to see the rationale for this other opinion. We're not going to break it down into its finer details, though.
Should also affect what time is the Shema? Right?
Why? By the night? No. What did Rebbe Eliezer mean? Rebbe Eliezer meant three watches. That we already discussed yesterday, right? Rebbe Eliezer meant three. So the Mishnah, which said what time you say Shema, and we use the amount of watches to tell you the time frame, that's for sure the same. Yeah. Now we're just adding a side point of how many watches are there in the night.
So we talked about the three symbols of the different watches.
Yes.
So is there
a fourth symbol? That's what I'm saying. We're not going to get into the Gemara of what that symbol is, but that would be the implication here. That what is the implication of having watches in the night? I mean, there's some implication of how many of what's going on upstairs and what we have downstairs that informs us of what's going on upstairs.
Still cats. We can add cats.
Huh? Cats? Yeah, we have more animals. Yeah, we could talk about more animals. Okay. So, yeah, Rabbi Nassan, so how does Rabbi Nassan answer that? That was a good kasha, right? That David and Melech woke up at midnight, which there's two watches left at that time. So how does Rabbi Nassan explain that there's only three watches? Right? How's he going to explain? Savala Rabbi Yoshua. He holds like Rabbi Yoshua, that's not. As we have a Mishnah in up ahead that's going to tell us. Rabbi Yoshua Omer. Rabbi Yoshua says, Ad Shalosh Shos. What time is the latest time for Kriya Shema in the morning? In the morning. The latest time for Kriya Shema in the morning. So you have a debate in the next Mishnah. But the opinion that Rebbe Yeshua, and this is how we paskin, is you have the first 3 hours of the day. And again, these are, you take the 12 hour, or you take the day and you divide it into 12 parts. Huh?
So that means it's four.
Why?
Four watches.
Why?
Talking about in the morning now.
Morning. Yeah, so it becomes four, right?
Why?
Because you're taking 12 and dividing it by four. So first 3 hours.
It's a fourth of a 12.
We have from midnight until sunrise, which is 6 hours, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have three more hours, which is nine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? That's the total here. That's what we're working with right here, mm-hmm. right? Really, it's not even nine because, yeah, we'll see in a second. Shiga, why does Rabbi Yoshua say you have 3 hours of the morning to say Shema, why you have that long? The verse says, when you get up, right? When you get up. So people aren't getting up 3 hours. I mean, today maybe, right? But before, the sun's getting up, the sun's up, everyone's up, right? Yeah. So why do you have so long to say Shema? Shekein derech malachim la'amod b'shal shalos, because it is at least the way of princes or kings to get up at 3 hours of the day, or into the third hour, which means like after 2 hours after sunrise, right? Into the third hour, right? So since there's still people getting up, and all Jews are compared to Bnei Malachim, right? They're like princes. So we have extra time to say Kriya Shema. We don't have to say it right at sunrise. You have an extra 3 hours of time to say it. So therefore, Shis Talele, how do we turn this out? How long was each watch according to the three watch position? Each watch was 4 hours, right? Three watches, 4 hours. So we're saying, how do you have from midnight two watches left until other people get up? Because I got up two watches before everybody else. I got up two watches before everybody else. So how does this make sense? So it says you add it up. You say there's Shis Delilah, there's still 6 hours left at night, right? Because it's from midnight until dawn, so 6 hours. The Tarti Diyamama, and the two more hours of the morning until all the other kings starting waking up. So Dham says that 6 plus 2 is 8. It's the same equivalent as equal to two watches. He's saying, I'm getting up at midnight, which is the equivalent of 8 hours, i.e. two watches, before my other contemporary kings. That's all he meant. Before the other kings who are like me, I'm up 8 hours before them. That's basically what he's saying. I got a whole day's working before the other kings are up. That equals, that 6 plus 2 equals 8 equals 2 watches that David HaMelech gets up before all the other kings. Ravashi answered this kash a little bit differently. He just said, you're right, it's 1.5. Mishmaro palga nami mishmaros karluhu. 1.5 watches, people also call watches. It's more than a watch, right? It's 1.5, right? It's 1.5. It's already watches. He didn't mean two watches. He just called it ashmuros, watches. So he gets up at midnight, which is watches before the end of the night. Even if it's 1.5 watches before the end of the night, it's still more than a watch before the end of the night, and that's all he meant. Okay, that's the story of David's wake-up time. Now, we're going to get into more detail. Now we go into this, we're going to have some more details on David's wake-up time. But first, since we just had the statement from Rav Zrika in the name of Rav Ami in the name of Rav Yoshua ben Levi, we're just going to do one more halacha in his name, now that we mentioned that. Yomar Rav Zrika, Amar Rav Ami, Amar Rav Yoshua ben Levi. In Omrim Bifnei Ames, you know, if there's a deceased person by you, right? We're not talking about at a eulogy or at a funeral. We're talking about someone who's watching over Mace until there's a burial or whatever, right? Somebody who's responsible to deal with this Mace. So, in Omrim Bifnei Ames, you're not allowed to be speaking in front of the deceased. Ela Devarav Shal Mace, other than the matters which are pertinent to his needs, meaning to taking care of the burial, the funeral, whatever, right? All the needs of the mace you're allowed to be discussing, but you shouldn't just be talking. However, Amar Rabbi Yama Bar Kahana, Rabbi Yama Bar Kahana said, Lo Amar Nel B'divrei Torah. All we're really talking about over here, the only prohibition of what you're allowed to say in front of the deceased is words of Torah. Why? Because this is the same reason you guys know not to wear your tzitzis out when you go to a cemetery. You ever heard this before? Right? Because there's this idea called Lo Ag L'Rosh, that when there's a deceased who cannot do mitzvot, right? It's like insulting to them to say, look at all these mitzvot that I still got going on, right? So you put your tzitzis in, you tuck your tzitzis in, you don't learn Torah right in front of them, right? That they're not able to engage in Torah study at this point, right? Or in the same way that we are, at least. But if you want to talk about the weather, then there's no problem, right? If you're just standing beside the base, just talking gestam, whatever you want to talk about, there's no problem with that. There's no embarrassment or degradation of the mace just to be speaking in front of him. It's only to be demeaning him by doing mitzvot that he can't be engaging in. Right? That's the point. The ikadami, but some people say, no, I'm a Rabbi Yama Bar Kahana, afilu b'divrei Torah, even words of Torah you can't say. The kol shken mil dalma, even more so, you can't say just some words, right, of any, just have any side conversation, because that would be an embarrassment. And even Torah you can't, because that's going to be a degradation to him because he can't do mitzvot. But there's two reasons here. The halacha is like the first lashon here, which is that you could you could speak random words, but not words of Torah. Okay, that was just a side halacha here we came across. Back to David's bedtime, or wake-up time, I should say, right? The time David HaMelech used to wake up. So we said David HaMelech woke up at midnight, right? That was his wake-up time, it was midnight. The David bepalga delayla habikai? Did David HaMelech really wake up only at midnight? Right? We're not saying that was so early. We're saying, did he really get up so late? Right? He slept in already until midnight, right? He didn't wake up any earlier. We have another pasuk, which makes it sound like he got up way earlier than that. Okay, so let's see. Right? Me'urta habikai. He already got up while it was like evening, right? Well, it was just turning into nighttime before it was actually fully night. He was already getting up. David, I guess, just had dinner, took a quick nap, and then got right back up. Right? He wasn't wasting any time. Habikai. Dechsiv, because the pasuk says, Kadamti baneshef vashoa. It says, I got up at neshef. What's neshef? Neshef means like to float. Right, it means to float. So it means when it's floating away, right? When the day is floating away into night, right? It's now turning into night. David's saying, I'm getting up at Neshef. Mar says, how do you know Neshef means that? How do you know Neshef was this evening, right? Tichsiv, because there's another verse in Mishle that says, B'Neshef Bo'erev, in the floating away evening, Erev, like evening, Erev is evening, right? In the floating away evening, Yom Be'ishun, the day is like a going in smoke. Laila va'feilan, you have the night and darkness. Right? You have nighttime and darkness. It's making it sound like you have both elements here. You have the daytime, some smoke in the daytime, and right, I don't know exactly what that means, right? And then nighttime coming in, it means it's this twilight period, right? Is twilight the right word?
Twilight's
the right word. Right, where it's transitioning from day into night. So you see from this verse, David got up at Neshef. Neshef is way earlier than midnight, so it's a contradiction to you. What time did you get up, David? Rav Oshia said the name of Rabbi Acha, Hachi Yakamar, David, this is really what David meant. Ma'olam lo avra laichatzus laila b'sheina. I never got up later than midnight. Right? That was the latest I would allow myself to sleep in if I was really tired. Chatzus laila b'sheina. Yeah, but, you know, usually I would get up earlier if I could, right? I get around evening time, I would already get up.
When would he sleep?
Huh? He didn't sleep very much, this is the point. He didn't sleep very much, right?
You take naps.
There's people, you know, there's people today who sleep very, very little, who I know people today who sleep, very, very little today, right? Even like the, you look at, like, you read some of these biographies and you have, like, some of the grandchildren or people who help service some of these gedolim, and they don't understand how it's even possible. They wake up, they go to bed at 11:30 after they're finished busy with the answering questions for 2.5 hours. They sit there, and at the nighttime, they open up their doors and they have the lineups of people that come, like Rav Chaim Kanievsky today, right? He just opens up his door at 9 o'clock and they line up for 2.5 hours. Then he goes to sleep, and they wake him up at 2, and he starts to learn from 2 to 6. He learns from 2 to 6 as a Seder, and he goes to Shacharis. He says, no one bothers me. He says, no one bothers me from 2 to 6. I can learn in peace. And no one asks me any questions, right? Right? He finally has a moment where no one's going to bother him. We can see it's the exact same cheshbon that David HaMelech had. It's the exact same calculation.
2.5 hours sleep at the most.
Well, no, they sleep during the day. You take a nap, too.
Oh,
I mean, but how long? Another 2 hours, right? Another hour and a half, another 2 hours, right? It's not like they're, right? The total is still under 5, probably, right? But they also break it up that way. Why sleep so long at once? You know, you get one REM cycle in, then you get another REM cycle in later, and you're okay, right? That's enough. That's enough for them.
You live to 104. Yeah,
that's, well, I think there's, yeah, exactly. Rav Zera gives another explanation to this contradiction of did David get up at midnight or get up in the evening. It's true, he wasn't really getting up at Neshef, but he didn't sleep solidly at that time. And from evening until midnight, he would doze like a horse. I'm not sure exactly what that means. As a horse, I guess, isn't fully sleeping at any point. He's worried something's going to happen so he can jump up. But at midnight, he would strengthen himself like a lion, right? And he would jump out of bed, and he would not be involved in sleeping any longer at midnight. Ravashi gave a little bit of a different answer. Ad chatzos laila, it depends what he was doing. You're right, he got up in the evening, but he switched his activities at midnight. He had a seder, he had a schedule, right? The midnight was already a time for his new seder, right? Ravashi amar ad chatzos laila, yosek b'divrei Torah. From evening until midnight, he would learn, right? That was his time for learning. I mean, kan ve'elech b'shirz v'tishbachos. From midnight on until the morning, he would write all of his songs, right? He also had to write all of the Hillel, and he had a lot of poetry and a lot of music to compose, right? So he did that in the early morning hours. That was when he did his compositions. Okay, so that was David's wake-up time. We still have a little bit more on this. So we said the word neshef meant evening, and that's when Dhamma gets up, because Neshet means to float away. It's this floating time of evening. So Mara says, really, the Neshet Urtu? Are you sure that Neshet means evening? Maybe it means HaNeshet Tzafru. I think Neshet really means morning, right? So maybe that means David Abel got up in the morning, like after all this, right? He got up in the morning. So Mara says, nah. Well, we're going to see first. But what's your proof that you think Neshet means morning? So we have another pasuk from Shmuel that says, Vayakim David, David struck them, right? This is some battle that was taking place, that David struck them, mihaneshef ve'ad ha'erev, from the neshef until the evening. It sounds like it's from the morning till the evening in this verse, right? That's usually when the battles take place. My love, mitzafer bad laila, doesn't this mean that we're talking about from morning until evening, morning until night? That neshef means morning? Where he says, no, lo, me'urta vadurta, it was from one evening till the next evening. It was evening of day one until evening of day two. It was a 24-hour battle. Where he says, that's very strange. Ihachi lichtov mi'a neshef ad neshef. It should say from neshef to neshef. Or, oh, mi'a erev ad erev. Or from erev to erev. It means the same thing. If neshef and erev mean the same thing, just pick one word and stick with it in the same verse, right? We're in the same sentence, right? You could use the same word to represent the same idea. Why did you tell me mehaneshef ve'ad ha'erev, from neshef until erev? You switched words, it makes it sound like it's not the same thing. Elama red, Rava says, fine, you win this round. Neshef in this case really does mean morning. But neshef doesn't mean evening or morning. It just means that time where it transitions. Like I said, it means floater. So all it means is when one period is floating away and we're entering into the new period.
It could be either, though.
Exactly. Rava says, trey nashwavi, there's two types of neshef. Right, neshef laila. There's the nighttime neshef where you're transitioning into night. The asiya mama. Oh, excuse me. That's the neshef of when it is night and it's transitioning into the day. Neshef yamama and the neshef of the day. The asiya lele. That's transitioning into the night.
Got it.
We have to stop here. Or how much time? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we have time. We have time. Excellent. Okay, so we get into the next. We're not able to finish this, but this is a good question to start. So. Back to David's bedtime here. It's his wake-up time over here. So we said that David HaMelech got up, or he switched his activities. Something happened at midnight where things changed, right? And David HaMelech was sure that I never slept past midnight. He was very confident about this midnight claim and his changing of activities at midnight. There's two watches left. The question is, how did he know exactly when midnight is? Right? That's a tough time to know when exactly it is. I know exactly it's midnight right now. Well, right. That's a good point, too, right? But especially when you're sleeping, but in just in theory, how do you even know when midnight is exactly?
And you have like watches and those things.
Or even if you really know astronomy well, you could probably figure it out, right? Because you know the constellations and what season it is and where they should be passing over the sky at certain points. And I'm sure some people were experts in this, but like you're saying, he was sleeping. And we're going to see really what the kash is that we don't believe that David HaMelech can know exactly when Chatzos. We're not talking about, approximately, I know, I see the skies. Approximately, it's about now. No, he has to know when is midnight. He has to know the exact time. Right. So, the David mihavi yada palga delaila emas, did David really know exactly when midnight was, that he was so sure that he got up no later than midnight? Well, really, what the kash is? Hashta Moshe Rabbeinu lo haviyada. We have a proof that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't even seem to know when midnight exactly is. And David, we're going to say David knew. Now, what's the proof that Moshe doesn't know? So this is the story about the Makas Bechoros, where he comes to Paro and he says Kichatzos Laila, approximately midnight. Right? He says approximately midnight. Midnight is going to go down. Right? So this is very strange. What is this approximately midnight business? Right? Right? The chesim, because the verse says Kachatzos Halaila. It says Kachatzos Halaila. It says approximately at midnight. Watch out, because things are going to be crazy here. And Yotze Besof Mitzrayim. I will come out. I mean, this is the Hashem saying, I will come out in the midst of Egypt at approximately midnight. That's what Moshe That's how Moshe relayed the message to Paro. So Mar says, my Kachatzos. What does it mean at approximately midnight here? If that's what Hashem told Moshe approximately midnight, well, if you look in the verse, it's actually not what Hashem said. Hashem said bechatzot. Hashem said at midnight, and Moshe changed it to at approximately midnight. Right? He changed the words. So is it? But the Gemara is entertained now. Maybe you're telling me that Hashem really also told him it'll be approximately midnight, and that's why he transferred the message that way. Someone says, I don't think so. Mika sveka kame shemaya, does Hashem have any doubt of exactly what midnight is? He's going to tell you approximate? If he doesn't want to do it at midnight, he wants to do it at 12:02. Say it's going to be at 12:02. But what's this at approximately midnight story, right? Right? What's this approximately midnight? Ela de amrle, so it must be that Hashem said bichatzos. It's going to happen at midnight. Then Moshe went and said approximately midnight. Alma, you see here, Misafkale, he didn't even know what midnight was. You see, Moshe wasn't, he didn't want to make a claim that he didn't know what it was. He didn't want to say midnight. And then Paro's going to say, oh yeah, what time is that going to be at tonight? Right? He says, we'll see. Right? He didn't want to get caught, right? So the Gemara says, Moshe didn't even really know when Chatzos was. The David Abiyada, and you're going to tell me David knew? Okay, so that's the Kasha, right? We're going to have a bunch of answers to this Kasha. Let's start with the first one, right? There's, I think, three answers, if I remember correctly. So the first answer to this Kasha is well, David had some assistance. You're right, it's very difficult to figure out exactly what midnight is, but David had a machine, he had a tool that he had developed that was going on an alarm clock. The kids, right? He had an alarm clock. Right? What was his alarm clock? How does his alarm clock work? David simana havile. David had a simen. Right? What was his simen? The Amar of Acha bar Bizna, Amar of Shimon Chasida. Kinor hayatolui lemaylo mimitaso. He had a harp that was suspended by the window above his bed. Shel David. The kivan shigia chatzis laila. Apparently, right at midnight, ba ruach tzfoinis. The northerly wind starts to blow. Punkt, right at midnight. That's some, I don't know, right? But apparently, there's a northerly wind that starts to blow. It doesn't have to blow hard, but if the northerly wind starts emerging right at midnight, then Oshev's bow and starts blowing on his harp, Umenagen me'elav and starts playing by itself. Right? So, the harp just starts playing itself. Miyad haya oibed v'oisek b'toira, so he would immediately jump out of bed and involve himself in Torah learning, ad sha'ol amud ha-shachar, until the morning light comes up. Kivan sha'ol amud ha-shachar, now we get to the story of why he's so important to learn Torah at nighttime, right, for certain people, right? Since as soon as the morning pillar came up, Nichnesu Chachmei Yisrael Etzlo, all the other wise men of the Jewish people would start entering by him. Amrulo Adoneinu Amelech, and they would start bothering him with all their needs, right, all their requests and all their needs. It's our master the king. Amcha Yisrael Tzrichim Parnasa. The Jewish people need some Parnasa. Everyone's broke, right? The GDP is very low, right? We need to increase the GDP. Everyone is poor. Amar Lahem, he said, Lechu v'his partners uzemizeh. Well, I'm going to start with asking other people for tonight. Maybe one person will help the next guy. I'm sure somebody here has got to be well off, right? We have to have a top-down, trickle-down, right? We need everyone to start contributing to each other. Amrulo, they said, we tried that already and there's not enough. They said, Ein hakometz masbias hari. A handful of grain is not enough to feed a lion. Right? There's not enough total. The GDP is too low. We need to raise the GDP in order to properly be able to sustain everybody. Ein habor mismal mechulyaso. A pit cannot be refilled with its dirt. And Rashi has a funny explanation here, but I like Tosfos' explanation here, which says if you have a pit in your backyard and you want to fill it up, you can't fill it up with your own dirt because you're just going to make another pit. Right, you need to bring in some third-party dirt here. You need to bring in some new dirt. Right? You can't fill up your... if you take from this guy and give to this guy's going to be starving. Right, so you can't solve the problem by just transferring wealth. Okay, Bernie, right? It's not going to work. Right?
You need to learn this
one. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Amr Lahem, Lechu... Okay, so he says the answer is... Lechu pashtu yedechem begedud. Okay, let's go extend our armies as a legion, right, outwards. Miyad, okay, so we should really stop here because this is already a whole new part, but Miyad yoetzim b'Achitofel v'nimlochim b'Sanhedrin. So they would go ask Achitofel's advice. Who's Achitofel? Achitofel's a funny character in Tanakh. He's one of David's advisors that isn't really so much a fan of David. It's like whenever there's one of these rebellions, he's usually quick to try to see if there's room for him on the other team. Right? Yeah, Achitofel's end actually came that way because he joined up with Avshalom's rebellion. Achitofel's known as being the best advisor of all time. He was like the smartest guy. His plans were always the best plan. Right? If Achitofel's got a plan, right, follow his plan. So they were Yoatzim b'Achitofel here. They were going to ask advice from Achitofel. What is the military strategy here for this campaign? Right? The end of Achitofel came about when he had the best plan of advice to give Avshalom so that Avshalom would defeat David in battle. But David knew that this was the problem. If he listens to Achitofel's plan, we're really doomed. So what David's move was he sent in a mole into Avshalom's camp that the goal of the mole would just be to get them to not listen to Achitofel's advice. That was the plan. Just don't listen to Achitofel, right? So he came up with some whole plan that he would be able to convince them that this one time, you know, everyone could be wrong once, whatever, right? He had this whole plan that could convince them this is a terrible plan. This one time, Achitofel's usually always right, but this one time, you know, he just missed it. And it's only because he didn't have all the information. You should know, I used to be on that side, and I just came recently, so I've got more information of what's going on with David, and he filled him in, and it said all the people decided that they wanted to listen to to the mole's advice and not to Achitophel's advice. Where the mole was Hushai Ha'arki, the hierarchy, that's a Hushai. So he decided, well, listen to Hushai's advice. And this time Hushai's got it right. But immediately at that moment, Achitophel was wise enough to realize that they were doomed for listening to this silly plan, and he went home and killed himself because he realized that he was going to get captured by David, and it was not going to end well for him the other way. So that's the end of Achitophel, who was the best advice. His doom was that they just didn't listen to his advice. Okay, so the Sholim, the Urim V'Tumim, and they would also consult with the Urim V'Tumim. That is the prophetic tool that was on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol that they would consult with before any battle to make sure. So that was the plan here. A little bit more on that. And we have to answer. We have a few more answers to the original question: is how did David know when midnight is, and Moshe didn't know? The first answer we said is nobody knew. He just had an alarm clock, and then daytime came, and everyone starts bothering him. Okay, well, we'll pick it up from here tomorrow, guys. Have a great day.